Any views expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and not of their employer.
Welcome to the App and Happen podcast, episode 102. Hi, I'm Al.
I'm John.
I'm Stuart.
And I'm Jerry.
Cool, we're back. We can't promise that we're going to be back regularly. We're going to see if we can do it, but we want to be you guys to be and girls to be along with Journey. So, John, what have you been up to since we've last been online?
So I think when we last spoke, I had just left my previous job and was starting a new job in a new industry that I'd not worked in before. I was doing something that was I was hired as an SRE, which generally I think we are doing SRE-ish stuff. So it's a lot of ops and infrastructure-y stuff. I would say that the company I'm working for are not necessarily always exactly delivering on the site reliability engineering kind of manifesto document that Google produced, but we're doing some of the right things. Just not necessarily all of them, according to the book. So I've been there for 2 years, more than 2 years now, which seems just amazing. Which just goes to show that it's been quite a while since we've all been together. In that time, I've now started working for a charity, and I'm on the board of trustees for charity. So that's an interesting turn where my life has taken as well. My kids are now both in secondary school, which just blows my mind, and so life is an interesting place at the moment. So let's go round to Jerry. What have you been up to since we last spoke?
I've been through a few things job wise. I actually left a permanent role, which let me concentrate more on supporting a client of mine, which involved finding a lot of tech debt that I'd incorporated into the design of their platform unwittingly. So there's quite a bit of time spent addressing all that. And yeah, just been going along the sort of freelance route finding multiple freelance clients and working for them and trying to fill my time that way rather than working for one organization or employer. So yeah, that's been the more interesting side of what I've been doing. It's more on the business side than the actual IT side. But yeah, it's been an interesting journey. Maybe we can talk about it in future podcasts.
Cool. How about you, Stu? What have you been up to?
So despite my reputation of changing jobs every 5 minutes, I've actually been at the same company for about 3.5 years now. So, I started out there as an SRE and trying to bring SRE to the entire organization. And some of them kind of approaches are taking shape now, but I'm no longer part of that team. I went to what was called a platform position, but kind of a bit more sysadmin-y, but also a little bit of Kubernetes, a little bit of observability and things like that. But it was a bit like going back a few years to what I was used to. And then currently I am classed as a principal software engineer, as someone that doesn't really class themselves as a software engineer. So it's really interesting at the moment. And yeah, there's all sorts of changes going on from that. But yeah, it's very different from what I'm used to, but it's exposing me to some things that I haven't been before, which is always nice. But at the same time, yes, there's a lot to get to grips with. But yeah, it's nice. In terms of, yeah, kids in schools, my son is about to start secondary school, and I still can't get used to the fact that he's not in nursery anymore. So yeah, it's and my daughter's not too far behind. So yeah, it's life just keeps trucking on, whether you like it or not. So yeah. Al, what have you been up to?
So I've kind of been in my current job for just over 2 years now. I'm kind of like the lead in a DevOps team where we manage a quite legacy API. We've got quite a lot of tech debt to look after. It's in a regulated industry. So in my place, there's lots of slow red tape I have to go through to get things done. So something normally like before, like where I'd have like full system admin rights on everything, I don't. it's just, it can be annoying sometimes. But it's an interesting challenges I get to play with. But I'm more of a lead these days. I'm not doing really much handwriting code. I'm either reviewing people's PRs or helping kind of design the product going forward. So I've been interested in playing with quite a lot with Pulumi. We'll probably go into a bit more rather than using something like OpenTofu or Terraform. But we have been starting looking at that, which is quite interesting. I've been looking at like encryption with OpenTofu, which is quite interesting because by default the state file is not encrypted, whereas like things with Pulumi, it is encrypted. So you haven't got to think about it, but now you have got to think about it. So yeah, so that is, it's really interesting. What would, do you want to really talk about this in our first little episode then, people?
So I think since we last spoke, there's been a giant elephant in the room that's kind of come along rather almost out of nowhere and just kind of landed smack dab in everyone's plates, which is the peril of AI. And by peril, what I mean is from a security perspective, it can be an absolute nightmare. So for example, most of the LLMs that are around at the moment have kind of these clauses where if you're paying over, you know, paying for support from the LLMs, you don't need to worry about, you know, your content being absorbed into the greater piece of, you know, their training data, unless you are DeepSeek, which is in China, and there are no controls whatsoever on the, what they can and can't do with your data. So that's been fun. One of the guys that I work with, who we've actually had on this show before, a guy called Nick, he and I were both come from security backgrounds. And he kind of was very bullish. You know, you'll never catch me using that dastardly LLM stuff. It's just going to steal all our data and send it to everyone and no one will ever see it coming. And, you know, it'll all be turning up in other people's data. And then my boss actually, who's Nick's boss as well, rolled in with this little tool called Claude. And I don't know if anyone's used Claude, but we use Google in my household, for example. And so I get to use Gemini as part of that. And I'd asked it to write some code for me in the past. And code with Gemini was not good. I mean, I don't know whether it's changed since then, but code with Gemini was, in fact, dreadful. I'll go as far as to say it was horrific. And I used ChatGPT before I still use it for personal stuff every now and then, but we have a blanket ban on using it at work because we don't have a commercial relationship with them. Anyway, so my boss turned up with Claude and I was like, yeah, this is going to be absolute rubbish. And then he turned out a proof of concept for something in about half an hour. And I was just like, hang on, what? And he screen shared whilst he was running it. And it was literally like, I'm interested in this thing here. And it was like, okay, well, I've generated the template for that. Can you tell me what you want it to do next? And it's like, what? And so I've been using it on and off for a few bits and pieces. And before I get into kind of my big win with it, I was just wondering whether any of you lot have done anything with any of the LLMs and kind of which one, if any of them you've used and kind of preferred using. So, Stu, let's start with you.
So this is where I have to make the admission that I have not used any of them yet, but that's out of personal choice. But yeah, I've avoided them so far, but I don't think I'm going to get too much longer because there's projects at work that are going to require it. But also because I'm a bit of a neo-Vim, well, just Vim lover generally, it's harder to integrate. So I've used that as a bit of an excuse to say, oh, I can't do it yet. So yeah, unfortunately, I will come to that, but.
Well, I mean, you say that, but Claude is I'm using it entirely terminal based.
Mm.
So you can't use that as an excuse anymore either, I'm afraid.
No, I could for a while, but unfortunately it's, I will have to bite the bullet soon enough, but yeah, I've done the odd thing with ChatGPT just to try it out, mainly to try and prank my son on something, and he actually believed it, so that was fun. But yeah, other than that, I've not used it for work stuff yet, so that I think that day's coming pretty soon. What about you, Jerry?
Yeah, so I'd obviously used it a little bit, but the first time I actually used it was working for a client fairly recently, beginning of this year, end of last year. And so the guy I was working for said, oh, if you could just do this this little Python thing too, because so it's for Postgres. Postgres doesn't have the ability, doesn't have a native tool to dump out individual tables. Not one that I could find anyway. So the idea was to write this script which dumped out tables and backed them up to an S3 bucket in AWS. The thing itself was running in AWS, so it was a separate account. So cross account, backing up to a bucket in a different account from a Kubernetes cluster in another account. And yeah, basically I used ChatGPT to write something in Python and asked for the specific functionality, narrowed it down, and finally in the end got a working product. Now I should say that I used my knowledge of AWS and so on to fix it when it wasn't working. There's a few bits that I spotted in the Python code, the rudimentary Python that I already knew, which I was able to say, look, that's not right. And like LLMs do, they go, you're absolutely right, and correct it to a working version. So yeah, that was my first sort of experience work-wise with it. And it was quite a success. And also, I did that thing of like running just a script in Kubernetes, what they call a job resource, which I hadn't been aware of before. And that's actually quite a good way if you've already got a Kubernetes cluster to just run a simple thing, almost like a Lambda. Because the thing was, I tried doing this in Lambda to begin with, but Python and its dependencies meant that it kept busting the limit for Lambdas, which I think is 50 megs. Anyway, so that was a bit of a tip there for just running simple scripts in Kubernetes. An extension of that is called the cron job. So there's the job resource and the cron job resource in Kubernetes. So that was pretty successful. Then I think there was slightly before that, the role I was in before that, my colleague was using ChatGPT extensively, and I struggled with this particular pattern in Terraform, struggled to understand it. Maybe we'll talk about this in a future podcast as well. It was to do with for loops and just all kinds of stuff, which I won't go into now. But I wish that I had used an LLM to explain that to me, because I think I would have got the hang of it in a few days, and probably wouldn't may have still been working in that organization. Who knows? But yeah, so there's some other stuff in between, but to bring it up to date, the organization I'm working for now as a contractor use LLMs quite extensively, and it's kind of actively encouraged to do kind of proof of concepts using an LLM. I mean, I'm using Terraform at the moment, but I could just as easily ask it to bring something up in another tool. What I want to avoid though is just writing code and then committing it. I want to actually understand the code that it writes.
I'll come back to that in a second, because you're going to be horrified with me in a second. Al, how about you? Have you done anything with any LLMs yet?
Yeah, so I have. So we all get a Copilot license at work. So I use it all day, most of the days. Not just for coding, but things like my grammar and spelling and doing emails and stuff, because I'm rubbish at that kind of thing. But I find it really helpful if you just type down what you want to write. What you're thinking, you know what it wants, and then ask it to be professional about it, and it comes back. Obviously, you need to check what it's coming up with, which is good. Make sure it actually says what you want to say. And I like it how you can tell it to like change the tone of the email kind of thing. Sometimes you don't want to come over too strong, or make it sound like you want to be more professional, which is quite good. I use it quite a lot to like review people's code as well, to like say explain it, because like if you get a PR and there's like 1,000 lines sitting there trying to read 1,000 lines of code, it's really hard. And the culture where I am at the moment is like, everything has to be right. It has to be perfect. It has to be. It can't just be. Well, I've been previous places where like, oh, it's just like, oh yeah, as long as there's no passwords or anything, or it looks right, we need to make sure that we're doing proper coding, making sure that it's professional. So asking to explain it. And we're going as well, it's like, you're probably going to go into deeper, is like how you can get it to actually write applications and specs and write, pretend to be a tester or a product owner, which I think is a really good way of how we're kind of using it. But okay, you then you have to be careful, because like, don't trust it always. Like a lot of people saying, oh, you can use it instead of using Google or whatever, but like, I'll give you an example. This week I had it. I'm doing a bit of an AVD project, which is the Windows Virtual Desktops in Azure. And because we're using Entra only ID machines, you have to, there's a thing called FS Logic. This where you, where like, it's, you remember the old roaming profiles where you log on and log off the PCs and it take a break? Well, it's all done by VHD files down the background. And because we're using Entra joined machines, it's a bit backwards. You have to use a storage account with page blobs. And when it stores files on these page blobs, you don't know what the IOPS is going to be or how much it's going to charge you. And if you Google it, you can't really find out what the IOPS are. But I asked Copilot, and it was saying to me, oh, it should get these ops. But actually, this is like rubbish. I asked it, like, are you sure about this? It goes, oh, no, actually, I was wrong, kind of thing. So you've got to be careful when you're asking. I don't see using it for asking questions, things like that. But I definitely like it for like helping me write things like PowerShell scripts. So a lot to do with it.
I did see a cartoon comic sort of panel, which was like a man sort of laying on his surgery bed with a robot doctor next to him saying, "But hang on, my appendix is on my left, isn't it?" "You're absolutely right, sir. I'm glad you spotted that. Your eagle-eyed observation skills have saved us all. Mm. We'll do a better job next time, shall we?" Or something like that. It's like, oh, God. But yeah, I've started, well, it depends on what you're thinking about. I've heard people like Alan Pope from formerly the Ubuntu podcast, but it's now
Linux Matters
refers to it as the enthusiastic intern, which is quite accurate. I also like to refer to it as a politician, because it sounds like it knows what it's talking about 90% of the time, until you find something that you also know about, and then you're like, no, you haven't got a clue about this thing, have you? So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, you saying before about, you know, using it to write stuff for you. So when we got Gemini at work, the first thing that we were coming up for a performance appraisal, and I basically pasted in all of my to-dones. So again, this is something that I've changed since I started work at this place, is I tend to make notes about the things that I've done at the end of each day. And I have that in a text file so that at the end of a week, if it's been a rubbish week, I can go, well, actually, I know it feels like I've done nothing, but at least here's the seven things that I did this week or whatever. So I took the output of that to-done list and I stuck that into Gemini. And then I said, here are my appraisal requirements, you know, for the last year. You know, here's what our company objectives are. Here's what our team objectives are. Here's what my boss's objectives for me are. Here's what my personal objectives are. Tell me where I've, you know, hit that, where I haven't hit that, whatever. And it came back and it was like, I was like, okay, in this section here, can you rewrite it so it sounds more positive? And in that section there, can we look at it from a more business, like you were saying, you know, a more professional perspective? You know, how's this helped us reach the, you know, our bottom line objectives and things like that? So I was quite bullish from that perspective. And as I said, then we got Claude. So I mentioned before that you'd all be horrified with me when I mentioned what I've done with Claude in the last year. So I was listening to a podcast, and I will struggle to remember what it is, because I listen to it all the time, but I can't remember what it's called off
the top of my head. That's a good podcast.
No, it's brilliant. I've been listening to it for, it's Jerry Bell, who's the guy that does the InfoSec Exchange Mastodon server, and his co-host, Andy Bell, who works for a company that's had a massive security breach recently. So the pair of them, when they talk to each other, so Jerry Bell worked for Big Blue, for those who know the name, worked for them as a CISO for a while. So he's from No, this one's going to bug me until the end of the show. If I suddenly scream out, it was this podcast, that's what it is. Anyway, so he was talking about... I've forgotten where I was going. Oh, he was talking about identity and kind of when you get a phishing call or you get a video call, you know, with a deep fake purporting to be your boss asking you to, you know, send them gift cards for something because they can't make a payment, or, you know, those sorts of things. I thought, oh... there's a brilliant thing here. We're using OIDC, Open ID Connect system to authenticate to stuff. Why not have a thing where you can effectively have a challenge word and the other person can see whether that challenge word is valid for you? So I started writing this piece of software called Authenticate. Now, I will say my priorities shifted massively since I started on that. So although I use the term Authenticate and I have registered the domain name Authenticate, that project has... I wouldn't say evaporated. It's on my to-do list at some point in the future. But I had a plan. I had a plan to do this thing. But to do that, I needed an OIDC server to talk to. And I could not find a simple Python script that would be an OpenID server. So I wrote one. Because obviously that's what you do when you're bored and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're struggling with this idea that you can't deliver. So I wrote this OpenIDC server. And it's designed to be entirely used by, you know, CI/CD systems and unit testing systems, in that it's designed to be drivable by a computer without having to give it, you know, here's the username and password for our Okta login, because that's, you know, top class security right there. In fact, it's called TinyOIDC. It lives on the Authenticate domain. I'll stick it into the show notes. And literally, it has got 6 buttons on the page, which is log in as admin, log in as IT, log in as an account, log in as something else. And literally, it's those 5 buttons. So instead of doing the whole loop through the authentication system that you'd have, you know, username and password and MFA code, you know, it's literally a push button. So your Selenium or your Playwright unit testing, if you're using Python unit testing or whatever, can drive that button press really easily and actually build that full end-to-end test through your OIDC system and come back again. So I wrote that. And I wrote that by saying, I found this blog post explaining what the OIDC flow should look like. Read that blog post. Read the spec. And then implement me a Flask server that does this thing. And it wrote it. It took about a week, because just at the point I decided to start writing this was when Anthropic, who released Claude, said, oh yeah, we're going to start introducing service limits. And so you get a 5-hour window in which you can run 250 messages or 10,000 tokens or something else, and I can't remember what the something else is, but there's these 3 criterias, and effectively you get in a 5-hour window 100% across these 3 metrics. So you might use 100 messages and that counts as a percentage of your 250 messages. You might use, you know, 3,000 tokens, which counts towards your 20,000 token limit, and then you've got 2 of this last one, and he's like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm doing nothing else for the next 4 hours and 37 minutes. Not that that one ever wound me up that much that I was counting that many seconds. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I wrote this thing, and that was all great. And then somebody that I was working, was talking to, said, we use OpenID, we use OpenVPN for our VPN service, and we just use LDAP to log into it. And I'm like, that seems a bit insecure. I wouldn't be very comfortable with that. So I wrote a thing so you OIDC log in to get a really short-lived certificate for authenticating into OpenVPN. And again, I wrote it using Claude. I wrote a spec document. This is what I want you to implement. I want it to be test-driven. So you write your test, you write the code to fulfill the test, and then you test to make sure that you fulfilled the test. And if he hasn't fulfilled it, then keep developing. And it works. And the other thing that you can do with it, which is really useful, is, and particularly this is with Claude, but you'll find this with all the command line driven stuff. So Copilot does it. You can get Gemini to do it. But again, I wouldn't trust Gemini to write code ever. But what it'll do is it runs it in a terminal. And so it really literally goes, running command. Here's the output. Let me just scrape the bit that I need out of that. So it's not eating all of your tokens. And then let me do something with it. So I did that. And yeah, it's really good. You can say to it, I want this to be PCI DSS compliant, or I want this to follow the AWS well architected guidelines, or I want you to implement the OWASP top 10 and the OWASP API top 10 and the OWASP infrastructure top 10, which I must say, those last two are ones that I didn't even realize existed until I started looking at this. So that's cool. And yeah, it's changed the way I look at proof of concept, because you can go from not 0 to 60, but you can go 0 to 20 really quickly. So that OpenVPN thing that I wrote might have taken me 6 months to write before, and instead took me 2 weeks to do. And that is with about 1,700 unit tests and probably about, I don't know how many lines of code it is, but let's say it's 30,000 lines of code. Even with the best will in the world, I couldn't have written that code in 2 weeks. Now, is it the best code? Don't know. Is it the most secure code? Don't know. But what it is something that I can now look at and go, this looks enough right for me to ask somebody who knows what they're doing with this stuff to read it and review it. And the other thing that you can do with LLMs is, particularly if you've got two, so Claude and Gemini, or Claude and Copilot, or Gemini and Copilot, or whatever, is you can say, you are a security auditor, read this code and tell me where it's wrong. Okay. The other LLM, read the output from that and write the code to fix the output from that. You are now an implementing engineer, read the output from this thing and tell me where that's got things wrong. And you can bounce the ideas between these multiple personalities to get an idea at the end of it. So
you can also sort of just critique the code, get another model to critique the code that one model has written, or even critique its own code. So sometimes you still get a result from that. So
yeah, absolutely you do. Absolutely you do.
I have a question, actually. You said about doing this for proof of concepts. How often do these proof of concepts become production concepts in terms of, do they eventually go live, or is this kind of a, this functionally works, now we need someone to write this, basically start writing it themselves, or is it just kind of a, right, we'll review it and get it to the point that it actually becomes live? I'm just intrigued as to that transition to a production deployment of something.
So TinyOIDC is running live today. There's no ifs, no buts, no whereabouts with it. But that's because it is not securing anything.
Yeah, I mean, the one that I mentioned, ChatGPT Python scripts, is running, but it's not actually running in a production environment. It was written for a non-production environment. So, but I'm pretty sure it's in place and it's doing what it's supposed to do.
And again, I think if you go into it, so I'm quite open and honest in all the things that I've written. So like I've put in, because all these things that I'm talking about are all open source stuff. They're not internal things.
Yeah.
They all say, you know, this is a ChatGPT or, you know, Gemini crafted piece of code. You know, if you believe that your work's been stolen by you know, please let me know. I'll rewrite anything that needs rewriting.
Or if it's open source, then people can contribute to it, I guess, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, what I was keen to do was get it to a point where I could consider running it production. I would need to actually read through what was there first. But yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally, and this is probably the bit that's the bit that makes me think that actually it's probably all right to do this, is that the code that I'm writing, none of it is rocket science. None of it is stuff that no one's written before. I'm not implementing my own encryption with this stuff, for example. I'm using off-the-shelf packages. What I'm doing here is taking several concepts of things that I know work and doing my own spin on it. So again, if it was, you know, please create me a quantum resistant encryption system, I wouldn't even start there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact you can ask it to, you know, ask multiple different engines to look at it and find security holes is a net positive, because you're not relying on. So when I was at a previous employer, they had this policy of not having two security products on the outside boundary from the same vendor. So if you could break one, you couldn't break the second, or it was harder to break the second one.
Yeah.
And I've kind of taken the same approach with the code that I've written with this. I don't rely on one tool to remember which side of the body the appendix is on. You know, it's asking two separate products, which admittedly probably have all been trained on the same set of scraped data, you know, the same set of robbed books and the same set of stolen photographs and you know, cartoons and whatever. I'm very aware of the ethical concerns about where the source materials come from. And I think if it wasn't so good at what it's produced, I wouldn't have been taken in. But at the moment, it's turning a productive month worth of work into a productive week's worth of work, and in some cases a productive day's worth of work. And that, for me, in the size team that I work in, is a game changer.
Does definitely speed things up. So I was going to mention, just with debugging, you know, I've written a piece of Terraform code myself, or Ansible code or whatever, and it's not working for some reason, and I can't find it. I don't know what it is. So if I just paste the relevant code into the chat window, I will always obfuscate, you know, the names and stuff like that when I do that. And then it will just come up and it will go, oh, you're missing a semicolon on this line. And, you know, that has saved me like hours, I swear, at times.
I think if you haven't got a contractual relationship with your LLM supplier, then it's much harder. So, for example, me using Claude with a license that I've got with Claude means that I know that my training data will not appear in its, my data will not appear in its training set anywhere. Mm. Likewise, the Gemini subscription that we have for work and that I use for my personal stuff is all done under a contract with Google that is being paid for. So they have promised not to use my data in their training sets. So from that perspective, now equally, I am again also aware of the fact that they did wholesale steal huge swathes of content off the internet, and them saying, we solemnly swear we're not going to steal your data.
Pinky promise.
Pinky promise. I mean, I agree. The problem is, particularly with something like Claude, where you're basically running it in a directory of code and you're saying,
yeah,
please, can you look at, run this command and tell me what the output means and tell me why this isn't running. You need to trust it.
Yes. So I've only come to this really recently with this latest role, is actually, so they use Light LLM, which is like a command line thing where you can use different backends. You can point it to different backends. And, with that, you can just point at a directory, like you say, and a directory containing your code, and just if it's like an Ansible role, for instance, that's a lot of directories and files, and you can't really do that in the chat window. So I've only just come to that. Really, up until now, it's just been pasting bits of code into and the occasional full script when I think it's, you know, not revealing anything that shouldn't be. So yeah, that's an interesting side of it, I think.
So Stu, you mentioned before that you've not used it yet because of concerns. I mean, is there anything that's in this lot that's made you kind of go, oh, you know, actually maybe it's going to be all right? Or do you still have those ethical concerns or whatever concerns are that you've got?
I still have the ethical concerns about, and that is kind of the problem. It doesn't entirely help that, yes, I've been with someone who is in the environment industry for quite a long time, so I am very, very aware of things like that. So I'm very hyper aware of, right, how much energy things are consuming and things like that. So it just makes me less okay with it. So I've got to get over that barrier before I'd use it, and I haven't found... There will probably be things in future where I have to, but I've not got over that hump yet. I still need to kind of get over that to be able to be okay with using it, and I'm just not there yet. So, but some of the things that have been mentioned today do make me at least wonder a little bit, but I'm still not quite there. So yeah, I still have that ethical problem with it.
I think the whole thing about data centers and the energy usage and so on, I think maybe we don't normally talk about sort of the industry side of things, but the AI bubble at some point is going to pop, which means all these data centers that are being talked about probably won't get built, because what I've been reading recently is an article by Ed Zitron, who's done a really long article about just it's not going to justify the amount of money that it's costing. Either that, or it's going to have to get a lot more efficient.
I do remember hearing something really early on about how it's not so much the energy that it's using, but it's the cyclical nature of who's... So, like, NVIDIA will buy, will pay for a certain amount of stock in a company to fund them being able to buy
their GPUs.
NVIDIA chips
yeah.
for the GPUs, you know. So, I don't know.
The other thing as well, you've got to think about it as well, like, one of our interns in our team, he's a developer. Yeah, he did, like... We've been forced to kind of use it to like be better, but it's like just asking it to write the code. And if you don't, you're not learning how to code, if that makes sense. And that's what she's worried about, is that for me or you, it's quite handy because we can just ask you to do stuff because we've already done all the hard work. But if you're coming in from kind of like school or whatever, then it is, how do you learn this stuff? All you're doing is asking it questions. And I've got another fellow friend's daughter who really hates AI because she doesn't like it because she thinks it's going to take all our jobs for anything, but I don't think it's going to be that kind of thing. It's the way of cheat learning kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, kids do use it to do their homework as well. Let's not forget that.
Right, first thing, most important thing, I've remembered the name of the podcast I was talking about before, because that's clearly the most important thing here, which was the Defensive Sec podcast. Anyway, the other one is there's a book that I read a little while ago called Human Resources, and I can't remember the author. I will dig the name of the author out, but effectively it's effectively the same thing you were talking about, you know. The last person working for this company is the human resources intern that was brought on the very last day before they sacked a whole bundle of people. And eventually he works his way up through the management chain and discovers that actually there is no management left. It's all AI all the way up. And he's the only person left because he is the human resource.
Right.
So it's a particularly dark book, gotta say. But, you know, it was an interesting short story. I'll dig that out and stick it in the show notes.
One of the things that struck me is, so one of the things I used it for recently is to write a design document for a bit of work that I was going to do. Writing the design document is obviously part of the project, but it can take a long time to knock, you know, however many paragraphs together. So giving an LLM a spec, getting it to output something, that's a massive time saver as well. And I can get on with the actual coding once that's done, which is pretty handy.
One of the things that I hate to be this, to have this kind of, I listen to all these podcasts and I read all this stuff person, but I was listening to the Open Source Security podcast a little while ago, and I don't know whether people know, but the Project Curl, which is used in almost everything, you know, cars use it, you know, aeroplanes, they've got it on board there, you know, most drones are running, you know, some form of libcurl or something in there. And they've had a massive problem with AI slop, which is, for those that haven't come across the term before, AI slop is effectively where you point an LLM at a directory of code and you say, can you find me a thing? And it will come back with, you know, oh, there's a function in here, which may or may not exist, that's doing this thing that it may or may not be actually doing. And it will produce a response, you know, oh, you're absolutely right. Here, like you were saying before, here's a thing that you're right. This thing here is wrong. And here's how to activate it and trigger it. And here's how to prove that it's a bug. And it'll hallucinate, which is not the right term for it, but it'll invent, you know, sections of code or classes of bugs or whatever. And it will then assert that they are accurate. And the curl project was inundated. I mean, to the extent that where they basically said, look, if you're submitting stuff with an LLM, we're pretty much just going to reject everything straight off the bat.
So this is bug reports for the curl project.
This is security reports and bug reports for the curl project.
Right, right.
And the guy on the Open Source Security podcast had the first person that was called out by the curl project as having correctly used an LLM to find bugs in curl. And effectively, they found 5 or 6 tools, and they used each of these tools to kind of feed off each other and find these bugs. And again, it's a really interesting listen to. I'll stick a link to it in the show notes because it's well worth a listen to. Particularly if you're interested in LLMs, because it's quite a comprehensive talk about what the kind of the state of the art as of, you know, a couple of weeks ago is, and it's quite interesting from that perspective.
There's a YouTube video by Kurz Gesagt. They kind of do explain these sort of scientific and other concepts with cute, cuddly cartoons. But that's quite a good explanation of AI slop on there. So maybe I'll put a link in the show notes as well to that.
We've been talking quite a while. I think for our first one back after, I think it's 2 years. I'm just looking at our kind of show notes from when we did our last prediction show, which was episode 95. And that was predictions for 2022. So it's been quite a while since we've been together for this.
I think that was a few before we went on hiatus, but the frequency since episode 95 was quite low. So.
Put it this way, I know I hadn't relocated been in the last one. I was still in the old place, and that was 2.5 years ago nearly at this point. So, yeah, definitely at least that long.
So we should probably talk about what we're going to try and do going forwards. So one of the reasons that we struggled to record for the last couple of years was just because generally, particularly as we were coming towards like episode 100, we were finding it harder and harder to actually find a slot where we could all record. And one of the things that we've kind of agreed that we're going to try and do going forwards is if one of us is not available. So previously we would reschedule significantly if we couldn't all be here because we wanted to be. We will enjoy being part of these conversations. And I think over time it would be becoming harder and harder to schedule that. So I think going forwards, what we'll find more of is more shows where maybe there'll only be 3 of us or 2 of us. A bit like if you listen to them, the Linux Lads podcast, where they'll be like, so-and-so couldn't be on the show, so we're recording without him. Hopefully we'll never get to the point where there's just one of us, but we'll see what we can do. But yeah, we all love doing this, frankly. And it's been a real blow that we've not been able to do this up until now. But, you know, we're all back together. And actually, I should say that we're all back together just with enough time for OddCamp 2026 to occur. So maybe you might even see 1, 2, 3 or maybe 4 of us. We'll have to see. We're making no promises.
Don't jinx it.
I mean, you know, but hopefully we'll all be there. Maybe, possibly.
I've already got my ticket, actually, so I'm going to be there.
You see, I haven't.
You said that last time, Gary. But
Oh, yeah. True.
The downside to me living like half an hour down the road from here is that I get a bit blasé about it, and I'm like, yeah, I'll be there. I don't need to sort anything out. I should probably do something about this. So we'll see what happens. I do remember the last one that I went to, I ended up having to catch the half past nine bus home on the Sunday because there was no trains running. I was like, oh God, how am I going to get home? So hopefully this is the start of something amazing. We're going to get back into the game and you'll see us more often, more regularly. But if you don't, then don't worry. We still want to be here. We still want to keep doing this. If we're not here, it's because we're not here for a reason. We'll get back to it as soon as we can. You can still reach out to us at, I think it's show@adminadminpodcast.co.uk.
Yep.
We are still on Telegram. We aren't on any other platforms that I'm aware of, unless I've missed something in the last 2 years. So we're still on Telegram. We're still available on email. So feel free to message us and welcome us back with open arms or something.
I think it might be mail@adminadminpodcast.co.uk. I think. Not sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you control the domain anyway, Al, so you can sort that like that. It's not a problem at all. I think there's a contact page on the website. So if you're struggling because I've fat fingered the details on this message, then feel free to just look on the contact page and you'll find all the ways to contact us on there.
Cool. So we'll speak to everyone soon. So bye for now.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Now it's over. I can open any door. Now it's over. Now it's over. I never needed you before.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.